Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And hello, Pittsburgh Steelers fans. Welcome to another episode of Steelers Q&A. And it's me this week, Tony DeFio, and I'm alongside Kyle Kreis. Is that how you say your name, Kyle?
That's exactly right. You are 100%. You're batting 1,000. This is going to be a perfect show.
Oh, man. Well, then let's just cut it off right here because I can't top 1,000%. Anyway, so you're in what? You're over out in the West Coast?
That's right. It's Los Angeles where the rookie synopsis, I don't know what's going on there. The rookie meetings are going down. I've been trying to stalk Kenny and George and Calvin, but they've been pretty quiet on socials out here on the West Coast. I thought maybe I might, you know, try to track them down somewhere, but all quiet on the Western Front, as someone once said.
Well, give it time. Give it time because two of those guys are receivers, so there's a good chance that one of them is going to say something on social media. It's going to make the news. So I can't wait. I'm here for it. But before we get started, I'm always curious about this kind of thing. How'd you become a Steeler fan originally?
I mean, born and raised in Fayette County, Uniontown, Pennsylvania. So it was in my blood, you know. It's like saying, like, how did you get into oxygen?
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, that's. I've had that. I've been breathing that oxygen since 1980 when I was 7. So, what's the earliest game you remember?
I mean, I definitely remember the end of the Knoll era. I can remember the '89 playoff game against Houston. Maybe that's a good starting point.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because the first game I remember watching was Super Bowl 14 against the Rams, but my first moment that I remember being really excited about them is watching them celebrate in the locker room after they beat the Oilers in the AFC Championship game in 1980, January of 80, that led to that Super Bowl. So that's pretty cool. I can't believe it's been 42 years since I've been watching them. It's amazing. And when you watch a game, do you? These are all cliched questions, but I don't know. It's cool, right?
Give me the cliche. It's Q&A. You've got Q. I've got okay, A's.
Yeah. Do you when you watch the game, do you have like your own setup at home, like with a TV package, or do you go to a Steeler bar?
When I first moved out here, it was DirecTV, but I just thought there was a rip, you know. So I go to a bar. And 10 a.m. kickoff out here on the West Coast. So usually it's me and Greg, my podcast partner, from what Ian's talking about, we're usually the only ones in the whole bar at 10 a.m. it's technically a Bears bar, but luckily the Bears haven't had any reason to set an alarm for out here, you know?
Right. Yeah, somebody posted a graphic yesterday tiering all the teams, and the Bears are right down there in the bottom of the ranking. So I guess it's going to be a while before that bar is filled up. At least
that's right.
Anyway, yeah.
Ireland's is a Steeler pub for another season. Thank you.
maybe the Rams will start getting some fans interested after they won that big game last year. You never know.
Don't jinx it.
So you're a stand-up comedian, right?
Allegedly. Allegedly. I don't know if you'll have anyone. I don't think anyone in the chat can confirm it.
Well, I mean, what's the biggest crowd you've ever played to? Because this stuff fascinates me because I've always wanted to do that, even though I had no talent. So,
I mean, hundreds, I guess, you know, nothing, you know, nothing's big, bigger than that, at least.
You ever open up for anybody famous that we would know?
I haven't opened per se for anyone like, but out here in LA, it's kind of like, it's like a showcase town. So I've been on lineups with like Jeff Garlin or Whitney Cummings or a bunch of, you can find yourself on a show with anyone from Craig Robinson to anyone in this town. It's Lipstick City, baby.
That's so cool. That is so cool. Yeah, I've always wanted to try that. So maybe one of these days, well, I'm 50 now, so I have to have a midlife crisis. So maybe that'll be one of my things that's on my bucket list, which I'm legally required to have now as a bucket list. So maybe I'll try that.
There's a couple spots in Pittsburgh there. I know there's an improv at least.
Yeah, there's a couple places. Yeah. The earnings there, I have to do it. Of course, 2 years ago, I didn't think I'd be doing this. So you never know. You never know. But maybe we'll open together and I can open for you. And I'll bomb so bad that it'll make you look really great.
Just write, all you got to do is write 5 Baker Mayfield jokes, and I'm sure you'll be a king at the end.
That's true. Yeah. It doesn't really take much in Pittsburgh for to get a laugh, or at least get a cheer anyway. But as the title suggests, it's the Q&A, and it's your show. And the reason why I'm saying that is I heard Maddie Peverell say that in the other show. So I know that's what you're supposed to say. It's your show, people out there in the live chat. So you have the questions, we're going to have the answers, right? But so what are your thoughts? We haven't really talked. I think we talked once ever. So we haven't talked at all since the draft. So you have any thoughts on the draft? Anybody you're like, what about like the thought of them drafting a quarterback? Were you on board with that? Or were you lukewarm? Were you a total anti-quarterback?
Well, I definitely think that we knew quarterback was going to be on the radar. But I was kind of surprised. I was along with everyone else. I thought it was going to be Malik Willis. So that initial shock that it was Kenny Pickett was, what? But since then, and you've had time to digest it, of course, I'm so excited about the class. I mean, some of my favorites are the lesser known guy, like the linebacker, from the 7th round and Tyler Snead, the rookie tryout wideout, some of these guys that may not even, hopefully they'll stick around. We'll see. Those are the kind of guys I'm rooting for.
The Heisman Redman Award candidates, those guys. Yeah, this is a great time of year, I think, as far as being just, you watch the draft, your free agency is pretty much over, you digest the draft, as you said, and now, whatever your reaction was at the time, slowly over time, you start to get excited about it, optimistic, and that's, I'm pretty easy to please when it comes to the draft, as long as they address needs and don't reach, I'm usually pretty happy. So but this year is different because see them draft a quarterback. I mean, that's news and that's something, there's a lot of meat on that bone, as Mike Tomlin would say. So, heading into, they just had their first rookie camp and heading into the rest of the OTAs and the mini camp and training camp, there's going to be so much to talk about. And when I say so much, I mean the quarterback. It's just going to be quarterback until they find their guy. But before we get to the live chat, I have one more question because for you, Kyle. Because as the title of the show says, we just had rookie camp. We just had a month-long celebration of the draft, and before that, it was free agency, and then the season, and then we have OTAs. Is there ever? Do you ever have a time where you're like, I just want to have a week or two and not have to really even think about the Steelers, like maybe watch some cat videos and immerse yourself in that, something, or in any other kind of hobby where you can just get away from the Steelers? It sounds like Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire where he writes that memo. I'm probably going to get fired, but like where you're just like, I just want to get away and no social media, nothing about the Steelers for at least a week.
Well, Steelers social media is often a place that few enjoy, but right. I've actually been, this offseason has been the most exciting in, a long time. And, part of it is because of the QB question, but I don't think I've ever been this invested in free agency. We've never been this active in free agency. Right. I don't think I've been this invested in the draft process. I usually make fun of mock drafts, but I think I probably read 200 of them this year. Yeah. So, there's something about this season that's different. And I think that energy is going to carry through to, camp, of course, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's such an unusual off season for them because they don't have Big Ben, of course. And they had so much cap space, which is That's, I don't think it's ever happened ever. I can't think of any time that they've had as much cap space as they did heading into free agency, other than when they had to manufacture it by restructures or something like that. And of course, it's the first time since '04 that they were in serious search of a quarterback. So, you know, it's really an exciting offseason in that regard. But you know, it would be nice every now and then to get away from it all. But that'll come in early July, I think. You know, after all the OTAs and minicamp, then we'll have a week or so to get away from it for a bit, which we won't, because not us anyway, the fans, but us, we have to keep working hard, but the fans can get away from it for a bit. But as of right now, the fans in the live chat, they have some questions.
I see a question.
Let's see, where is it? Who has it?
I'm looking at Dietrich. Let me hear. I'll bring it up.
Are you bringing it up, then?
How soon do you think the Roonies will be asking about a new stadium? I mean, I don't know. You know, what year is it? 2022? How old is the stadium? Yeah. Maybe 2122. I'll give it 100 years. They're not asking about a new stadium anytime soon, are they?
I don't know. I didn't. It kind of sneaks up on you because Three Rivers was built in 1970. It opened in 1970. And by 1990-91, the mayor at the time kind of proposed a new stadium for baseball and one for football. And everybody laughed at her. But by the mid-90s, it was like, you know, the Roonies, I don't think people realize this, but they kind of almost moved to Washington County because they couldn't get the funding in Pittsburgh to build, you know, what became Heinz Field. So they almost moved to Washington County. So by 95, they were already clamoring for a new place because, you know, all these other stadiums were popping up, you know, in Atlanta and other places. So, I mean, earlier in this offseason, I heard some radio people talking about Heinz Field, and they called it a dump. I'm like, really? They're already calling Heinz Field a dump after 21 years? So I wouldn't be surprised. I hope not, although this difference doesn't make to me other than taxes, but I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 or 10 years they're talking about building a new stadium for football. I think PNC Park is will be here for 100 years, mainly because nobody's going to be in it to ruin it. You know, the seats are going to be empty, so the wear and tear will be less on PNC Park than it will Heinz Field. But I think it wouldn't shock me with maybe 5-10 years.
Oh, maybe. I guess, you know, certainly technology, I guess, kind of drives that. Because you're right, you know, in the 70s, it was Riverfront, it was Three Rivers, it was Veterans. And then the technology changed, and it was a much personal experience. Maybe you're right. Maybe the technology will change, and, you know, every seat will have, you know, its own broadcast abilities or something, you know? So maybe you're right. I don't know.
Well, it's like, Every time they build a new stadium, you know, it's better luxury suites and better sight lines and better revenue streams, all the things that are near and dear to these owners. So it wouldn't shock me, but I personally think Heinz Field is just fine. But then again, I'm not a billionaire owner, so I guess we'll see. This one comes from William Conrad, and he says, Chase Claypool must get tougher or he's going to be out of Pittsburgh. Thoughts? What do you think about that, Kyle?
No, I don't. He's got to get tougher. I mean, the dude's, you know, sure, he didn't put up the numbers of his rookie year this past year, but I don't think it was a lack of toughness. You know, maybe a lack of effort at times. You know, maybe some above the neck things at times. Right. But you know, I'm not counting this guy out by any stretch. He's going to be out of Pittsburgh, maybe just because wide receivers don't get second contracts. So maybe he will be out just because of history. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't think toughness is a problem for him at all. I mean, I think he's a physical specimen. I think he loves to you know, have confrontations with defensive backs. We saw that last year. Even in that 41-10 loss to the Bengals, he was in the head of the defensive back that was covering him and forced him to make a couple mistakes at the end. I think the one thing that's curious about him, and this really, I think last year was a great example of that, is he had trouble with the 50-50 catches, which was supposed to be one of his strengths coming into the league. So I think that's something he has to get better at. I don't know if that's a toughness issue or maybe a more of a technique issue. And it's so hard to, and no offense to Big Ben, obviously one of my all-time favorites, but it's so hard to get a sense for any of these receivers from the last couple of years because of the quarterback play and the offensive line play. And so to evaluate these guys, I mean, I think Chase Claypool has the potential to be one of the top receivers in the NFL. And I already think Deontay Johnson is one of the top 20 or so receivers in the NFL, but you know, that's not, neither one of them are AB. And, you know, for as much of a problem as AB was off the field in the locker room, on the field, he was, in my opinion, a perfect football player, or at least close to it. So I think he kind of spoiled fans on the field because he was an all-time great. So I think
you think, you know, yeah, you think a Claypool with the 50-50 balls, but let's be frank, those aren't 50-50 catches. They've got to be placed in the right, you know, right, point, top of, you know, top of the field, you know, like, so some of those throws weren't 50-50, you know, balls. It was, the placement wasn't there. I think, you know, right, you got to give him another chance this season. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, the first half or so of the 2020 season, when before opposing defenses figured out what the Steelers were doing on offense, he was a beast. With that one game, he had four touchdowns. So, I think the potential's there, the ability's there. I just think, you know, once they figure things out with the quarterback, with the line, with the offensive philosophy, you know, they're going to be able to utilize him and hopefully turn him into a weapon. So I'm not really that worried about Chase Claypool.
Not at all.
Here's one from,
these Mason haters. I see him in here.
Shrek Johnny's friend. Do you feel bad for Mason, not Rudolph, Kyle?
I mean, you know, he's certainly on a downward trajectory. I do feel some sympathy because, you know, just a couple weeks ago, he was doing the West Coast media tour where it was looking like it was, you know, him and Mitch was the battle for QB1. Right. But, you know, some of these people, I see Reginald Rivers in the chat saying, is he even going to make the roster? I think so. I think that, there's so much value in that QB3 that I don't want to, I'm not trading him for a seventh round pick or just cutting him because, right, you know, we've got four QBs on the roster now. I mean, we've got so little salary tied up in the QB room that I'm not worried about, you know, oh, is Mason going to earn $3 million on the bench or something? You know, I hope he sticks around all season because we're going to need the helmet. Lord knows we use all 52 helmets every season. So
who would have thought in 2019 that we'd all be cheering for a guy named Duck Hodges, right, by December. So, you know, he's going to make it $3 million, but none of it's guaranteed. So, you know, even if you do trade him, what would you rather have, a quarterback, a third-string quarterback, or a backup quarterback with starting experience, or a seventh-round pick? You know, give me the guy with starting experience. He might not be great, but that's another thing. That's one thing I do feel bad about when it's Rudolph, and a lot of quarterbacks like him, young quarterbacks, is they don't seem to, people want to give up on them so soon, and maybe rightfully so in a lot of cases, but you just don't know. Cause it's a funny position because everybody else, they gain experience through repetition, through being on the field, even if it's just on special teams. They're out there. They're learning what it's like to play in an NFL game. Whereas a backup quarterback, especially a young one with limited experience, the only way they get that experience is to be on the field. But you know, if they don't go from zero to Pro Bowl caliber within 15 or 20 starts, well, then there's nothing left. There's no more meat on the bone for those guys. And I think it's a weird thing because so many of these quarterbacks, you know, they get flushed through the league in 4 or 5 years, you're out of the league. And you always wonder, well, if this guy was given maybe a much longer look in the league, if he was given more chances to start, if he had more experience over 2 or 3 years, would he have been able to develop his skills? You just never know. So in that regard, I do feel bad for Mason Rudolph.
if someone gets hurt, say they cut Mason and Kenny or Mitch gets hurt, they're not elevating Chris Oladokun. They're going to bring Mace back, you know, or they're going to sign a vet, you know, so.
Right. And somebody like him and, you know, it probably won't be anybody that's much better than Mason Rudolph, which is how it usually goes in these situations. And here's one from Johnny Bravo, which is quite a name.
Johnny Bravo.
Did you guys like Duck Hodges? How could you not? I mean, he was giving me Bobby Brister vibes at a certain point. Maybe it was because of number six, but what about you, Kyle?
You couldn't help but root for him. He was kind of fearless. You know, he had no reason to be on the field, so he didn't care about throwing it over the middle or so. You know, does he, you know, speaking of, earlier in the week, it was like, does AB retire a Steeler? Does Duck Hodges retire a Steeler?
Why not? Nobody's going to be mad at that. They'll probably throw him a parade because he was in the greatest position ever for a guy who didn't make it. He was a backup quarterback who wasn't around long enough to really be exposed other than by Trey White in that game against the Bills on Sunday Night Football. And that's when I met Brian, Anthony Davis, and Dave Schofield that night. And Rich. I met Rich. And we were all so excited. One of them had a duck hat on. I think it was Brian. I can't remember. But there were a lot of duck hats in the crowd. I just met them to tailgate and to do some podcasts. But they went to the game. But that was a kind of like that was like the night that everything kind of fell apart for him, and Trey White exposed him with multiple interceptions. And it was never the same after that. But for a time there, he was a phenomenon, and that's really what's a part of being a sports fan. That's what makes it so great is you never know when these kind of stories are going to pop up. Oftentimes, we try to manufacture them, like in the off season. Oh, can this guy be the steal of the draft? And then here's a guy who came out of nowhere. What was it, Division II, whatever they call the school, the level of college football he played. And, you know, I'm sure the nickname helped, but still he made plays for a while there and kept them in the playoffs. And for at one point they were 8-5 and they had the inside track for the last seed in the playoffs. So it was a nice little run considering what happened at the beginning of the year with Ben's injury.
I had more fun watching the Duck and May season than the 13-0 start season or whatever, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, after a certain point, first of all, nobody in the stands. That just was surreal. That took a while to get used to. But after like Halloween, even though they kept winning, it was pretty obvious that the offense just wasn't adjusting and they didn't have the ability to adjust. So, yeah, I agree with you. That 2019 season was far more magical than 2020, which sounds so weird because at one point we were talking about them possibly going undefeated. So it was a weird time. All right. Here's another from Dietrich from St. Dietrich Delaney. Hey guys, I looked at the rule book and didn't see a rule on asking follow-up questions. You're right.
Good point.
I didn't. Did you read the rule book? I didn't see it.
We'll got to take that to the rules committee next season.
Right. We'll see what they say. You know how they convene in the offseason. So my question, did Joe Hayden do so bad that no NFL team wants him? What do you think, Kyle?
Well, my guess is he's probably looking for, I mean, well, you know, was he making 8 to 10 a season with the Steelers? Mm-hmm. So he's probably, you know, looking for something like that. And I'm imagining if the Steelers are giving him an offer, it's probably along the lines of a vet min or, you know, one of these two and eight, you know, it seems to be what they've been doing this off season. So he's probably not interested in that. If he really wants to play come August, see where the rosters are, who needs someone maybe, you know, I'm guessing he's probably just asking for a little bit too much right now.
Yeah, like the private honey badger was for a while. What did he wind up signing for? I didn't see that.
He almost got 10, I think, 10 a year or something.
Yeah, so that tells me he was probably looking for about 15 a year, and nobody was willing to give him that. And you're right. Joe Hayden's probably looking for 8 to 10, and he's probably getting maybe half of that as far as offers, and it's probably going to take him a while. It's probably gonna be like a Melvin Ingram kind of thing. Maybe he'll sign with somebody right before training camp, but he's probably not going to be the problem child that – Melvin Ingram was so.
Do you think that there's room in the cornerback's room for Joe Hayden currently?
I sure do. I love Joe Hayden. I think he's he'd make a great mentor, provided he's willing to accept a backup. You know, that kind of like a Deshae Townsend kind of thing. You know, at the end of his career, I think he would be a great addition to that room, and that's what I was going to ask you next is, do you think they're, speaking of Ingram or a lot of these veterans that are still out there, do you think they're going to go out and address any other potential needs with a veteran free agent?
You say that there could be the most need for upgrade is, you know, outside linebacker, edge rusher. But you know, it's hard to say. It seems like there's more than enough people. I look at some positions like inside linebacker, and it's like, or even D line, and it's like there's way too many people for roster spots right now. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're going to be leery of that this year. To be honest with you, because of Melvin Ingram, and then you go back to LeGarrette Blount and even James Harrison. I think they're kind of leery of those vets with the resumes because of, you know, like Joe Hayden might be not that he has that kind of a, not that he's a problem child, but I think a lot of these guys they realize they're done after everybody else has already moved on. It takes them a while. Like you look at a lot of these free agents, these veteran guys, and their Wikipedia pages, they'll say he's currently a free agent, and he hasn't played since like 2018. They're not ready to give up on it, and they're not ready to move on and accept the fact that maybe they're not capable of starting anymore in the NFL, and their role is to be a backup. So I think I'd be a little leery. It would have to be somebody like a D'Angelo Williams, and you never know if you're going to have a D'Angelo Williams until he comes in here and plays a year and doesn't cause any, isn't disgruntled because of his lack of playing time. So I don't know. I think things have changed so much over the years because of social media and all, you know, the fans are constantly, and the media is constantly on social media clamoring for teams to improve, to get better. Why look at this list of free agents. Why aren't you trying to sign one of these guys? Cause I mean, years ago, it used to be like you would accept the fact that your backups are young, recent draft picks, undrafted free agents, or journeymen like Arthur Motes. That used to be, that's your standard backup player at every position. But I think now people want that ironclad, guaranteed insurance policy that if so and so goes down, then you know they don't have to be concerned with the depth. Well, you should be concerned because they're backups for a reason. So, I mean, if it's a calculated signing, then I'm fine with it. But if it's like a big name, like a Melvin Ingram, I'd be a little leery. But here's one I wanted to get to because this one, I actually wanted to write about this. But somebody, I don't know if you knew about this, Kyle, but somebody said that Jack Ham, I forget who the reporter was, but if he was playing today, he'd be a special teamer. And
wasn't it one of the GM candidates? Wasn't it one of the guys who didn't get a second interview?
Lewis Riddick?
No, I think it was. I'll find it. But I mean, come on, let's be serious. Come on, you know, like this guy is. You know, it's, we're not saying like, oh, could a backup linebacker play today? This guy was a Hall of Famer. Right, you know, yeah, right. Vince Williams. I think Vince Williams says this week that Jack Ham is a better linebacker than Jack Lambert. So right. Take that take to the bank, you know?
When he retired before LT came along, Lawrence Taylor came along and changed the outside linebacker position, Jack Ham was considered by many to be the greatest outside linebacker in the history of the NFL. I don't know if he was like just taking Jack Ham, the athlete from, and he was a great athlete in the 1970s. He was fantastic in pass coverage. I think when he retired, he was one of the all-time leaders in interceptions. I don't know if he was taking that guy from the 70s and putting him into 2022. Maybe he has a point there, but the athletes of today are so much better and faster, and their training regimens are so much different. You think Jack Ham would have the same physical attributes in 2022 as he had in 1970? No, he'd be the Jack Ham of today, and he'd probably be a much better athlete than even he was back then. So I think, you know, most great players are going to be great in any era because it's all relative to, you know, everybody's going to be starting from the same point when you're talking about what decade they came up in. So, you know, if you took James Harrison and you put him in the 1970s, he wouldn't be 278 pounds or whatever and lifting trucks for a living. He'd be, you know, around the same size as the other outside linebackers in the 1970s. So, you know, it's I think that was silly, and I think it was just another one of those deals.
Yeah, it was Doug Whaley, you know.
Doug Whaley, okay.
You know, and Jack Ham in the offseason was working in at a coal mine, okay? You know, like,
right. Yeah.
Give me a break.
they'd be doing, he'd be working. You're right. He'd be working out, you know, 365 days a year or 12 months out of the year anyway. So yeah, it's apples to oranges when you're trying to compare players from 50 years ago to today and say they couldn't play today because obviously they'd be exposed to the same elements that the current players are exposed to.
I think if anything, a similar question that might have some merit is, you know, could AB play in the physicality of the 70s era?
Right.
You know, like
right.
There's a conversation maybe, but Jack Ham, yeah. Come on. Give me
right.
A break.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, who was a similar size receiver? Right. Lynn Swann, right? I mean, he was tough as nails. He liked to go over the middle. He obviously had to deal with those crazy Raiders and always trying to give him concussions, and they did give him concussions.
Yep.
So much so that he had to retire early. And there's a guy who you put him in today's NFL with that athleticism, the leaping ability and the big play ability, the big game ability. I mean, he would be a top receiver. Now, could Antonio Brown go back and deal with that kind of stuff? You know, where there were no rules essentially. And you know, Swan played his first few seasons were before the Mel Blount rule. So it was even tougher for him the first few years. So yeah, that's a great point, Kyle. All right. Let's see what else we have here as far as questions. You see any questions on your end, Kyle?
I thought where are those good questions? here's one. Steeler Nation 412. Love that avatar there. Who has a better season, Claypool or Johnson? I mean, I would think, you know, just, I mean, we're seeing the volume in production from Johnson. You know, we might see 10 touchdowns from Claypool. You know, that's right. Hard to, I don't know. Maybe right. Claypool might have more touchdowns. Who knows? I don't know.
Right. I think Johnson, to your point, I think he's more suited to that AB kind of role where the passing game flows through him, you know, and he's more capable of catching 90 to 100 passes. Whereas Claypool is definitely the big play receiver, the guy you go to, the deep pass and the jet sweep, those kind of plays. So I think that's Claypool's role. Speaking of Mitch Trubisky, didn't you tell me before the show that you had like an inside scoop?
Well, you know, I got a tip off from the caddy that Mitch and Josh Allen were golfing together over at Mystic Rock up at Nemecul and Woodlands. So
wow.
I was trying to find out who had the longer drive. Apparently Josh Allen is looking like a monster, but Mitch is coming in pretty mean and lean himself. So,
oh, wow. That's good. That's good. I mean, on one hand, it's nice to see them golfing and having a relaxing Sunday, but on the other hand, they're not focused on football 24/7. That's all right. But speaking of Josh Allen, people talk about Lamar Jackson and him possibly wearing down from the physicality and always, you know, trying to run. But Josh Allen, I mean, he's in a lot of ways he's putting himself in more danger than Lamar because he's like a fullback out there. He's taking on tacklers just about every game. Do you think he's a big guy. Do you think he can last like an entire career without wearing down?
They're going to, I mean, some of those are scripted runs. They're going to have to cut back on those right. At some point. Right. But
yeah,
you know, he loves to get out of the pocket and run and, you know, he's not a run first guy, but he doesn't shrink from that at all. So
no. I mean, he's definitely capable. I just, if I'm the Bills, I'm like, all right, you're an MVP candidate. We're a Super Bowl candidate. I think it's time to do some more slides or at least go out of bounds. I mean, you can run, Josh. You can run, but when the guy gets near you, just go down. There's no shame in that. There's guys that get paid to run the ball.
Yeah.
And George Tessin brings up a great point. Of course, as we were saying earlier, that there's different conditioning back then for players like Jack Ham. So here we go from Sherry Richards. I have not seen Sherry Richards in a long time. Maybe she hates me now, but not if she's on this show, maybe not. And she asked, if you had to guess right now, who starts at center week one?
All right. I won't make a prediction about week one, but I will predict that the starting center at camp will still be Kendrick Green. I think he will still get the first as the, you know, he's kind of the, he, not that he's a veteran, but he is kind of the veteran, right, at least on the team now in that room. I think that he gets the first shot at center. There's so many people that can play center on the roster. And guard. So I think that, right, I think Green gets first shot at camp. Who knows what happens week one?
Yeah, it's a very fascinating, it's one of the more fascinating battles because, you know, Green was, he didn't finish off the year as a starter, but according to believe Kevin Colbert, it was because of an injury. So that tells me that he's the incumbent starter, even though he's coming into his second year. So that's going to be interesting. But obviously you have Mason Cole, who is a promising young guy, a free agent they brought in. But J.C. Hasenauer, unless I'm crazy, and I might be, he showed a lot of improvement last year from his first year. Would you not agree? Or, you know, he seemed like he was a pretty steady starter at the end of the year last year. So there's a dark horse who, you know, we're talking about Mason Cole and Kendrick Green. J.C. Hasenauer, undrafted free agent, he might be somebody who sneaks in there and you know, you do have to address these positions with first, second, third round picks, but you also have to get lucky with Ramon Foster, an undrafted free agent, one of those kind of players. So that would be an interesting development too.
Someone's going to get kicked to the practice squad. Someone might not make the team. You know, there's people like John DeBlue who put quality starts, who, you know, end up on the practice squad. It's that's going to be interesting how many people they keep on that line and who plays where.
Yeah, I definitely think they're much better off as a whole, the entire offensive line, than they were even a year ago. I mean, it wasn't going to happen overnight. I mean, they had to tear the whole thing down and start from scratch. And to think that they were going to find all the right pieces last year, it was probably, you know, a little naive of us to, it would have been great if it happened, but it wasn't going to happen in one season realistically. But now, you know, you look at the moves that they made last year, that, you know, finding a guy like Dan Moore in the draft and, you know, a couple years ago, Kevin Dotson, and then, you know, they go out and they bring in James Daniels this year. So, and then they have obviously a lot of young guys with potential who are versatile, you know, like LeGlue and Cole there's potential there to find a good starting five, hopefully.
And maybe not a lot of short leashes either. You know, not, right, you know, you don't do well, we got someone else who can do it too. So,
right,
a lot of fluidity. Yeah. Fluidity.
Oh, there it is. I'm glad you finally got it, because I wouldn't have been able to figure it out either. So, but Mike Tomlin loves position flexibility, and that certainly is the case with a lot of these linemen. So, it's an exciting thing. I can't wait to see how much the line has improved from certainly from 2020, but even from last year, you might even say it was even worse than it was in 2020. But last year there was more hope because there were younger guys.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it's hard to kind of gauge camp battles along the offensive line. You know, who's doing well? I don't know. Just besides who's getting the snaps.
Right. Yeah, because it's one of those units where everybody depends on one another. I mean, it's the one, really the one unit in football where, you know, all five guys have to kind of be on the same page in order for it to work. So if you have a weak link, then it could throw the whole thing out of whack, at least one side of the line anyway. Let's see what we have here from Allie Howard. Will Pickens teach Claypool to catch without falling down? I don't know. Do you see that in his draft profile, Kyle? Is he a good mentor type player, George Pickens? Can he teach?
You know, I don't. He seems to be a character. I think that Claypool will actually be the mentor in that room. You know, at least maybe the heart of the room. At least, you know.
Right.
I think that Pickens can only bring out good things for Claypool. You know, we joke, oh yeah, you know, he's gonna fall down all over the place. But the attention that you're gonna have to give Pickens on the outside, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think they're going to do? Does that mean they're moving DJ into the slot, and then it's Claypool and Pickens on the outside there?
I don't know. From what I understand, Claypool is the best fit for a slot. So I don't know. That's one thing that I'm not that well versed in. I know what X, Y, Z are, but as far who's best at that, I thought James Washington was had the potential to be a slot, but they said he was more an outside. So I don't know. Yeah, but I think there's they definitely upgraded, at least on paper anyway, the receiver room from last year to this year. If just on potential anyway. I mean, obviously, what Juju gave the Steelers his first couple of years was great, but I think he was dealing with injuries more than we realized down the stretch. And with the quarterback play, we don't know. And James Washington, you know, he showed so much potential, but he could never break through. And sooner or later, even with the talent at the position, you would figure the cream was going to rise to the top, and it really never did with him. So I think there's the potential overall, no matter where they fit, there's the potential there for to have a much better unit than they've had the last couple of years.
And tamper your expectations on Pickens too. You know, like, we've been blessed with Claypool and Juju's rookie seasons, but outside of those two, you know, rookie wide receivers aren't traditionally big contributors with the Steelers offense, at least, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so much for them to learn. You know, plus they have to develop chemistry with the quarterback, and, you know, a lot of them, they probably have to get used to the idea of blocking, maybe something they didn't have to do a whole lot in college. So there's a lot that goes into being a young wideout than we realize. It's not just all about going out and trying to get open. You have to, you know, learn how to be a professional, all-around football player. All right. Anything else you want to add before we call it a night there, Kyle?
Here, I'll just give I'll give a final word here, maybe to Steelers Freak, who says that Austin could send I could send Austin my 13-year-old son's last year's school clothes and they would fit. He better be fast. We got two small receivers. I don't think, you know, do you think that, because Ben loved the big receivers, do you think that now that Ben is gone, they were like, all right, now we can get those 5'9" and below wideouts?
They never quite gave him as many tall receivers as he wanted, but they were always at least 5'11", 6 foot. Calvin Austin, he is small, but he's not going to get big. You know, like I talked about on Friday, he's not going to get big this season. There's just too much for these guys to learn. Like you said, these young receivers, they struggle often in their rookie years. So he's probably going to be lighter by the end of the year than at the beginning. But next offseason, that's when he's probably going to have to get with a trainer, find the kind of the right program that works for him, and put on 5-10 pounds of muscle and do so without losing that speed, which is his top asset. But yeah, he's a small guy. I can't believe how, like, I thought he was like 5'9", but he's 5'8", 170. And you know how it is with this stuff. That might mean he's 5'7", 160. Who knows? But he's a small guy. But like Steelers Freak says, he better be fast. And he better catch the ball in space a lot. So, but in the interview I saw with him last week at the rookie camp, I like the tenacity he showed when discussing what he does with defenders who are bigger than him and who try to intimidate him, and how he gets right back up, and you know how they can't believe it when you jump right back up after they give you a big hit. So he definitely has a lot of character. So hopefully it'll translate and he can eventually be a valuable weapon for them. So I think it was a good show. What do you think, Kyle?
I think we did it. You know, they came with the Q's and we gave them lots of A's. You know,
we did. Hopefully they like the answers, but if not, we'll find out in the YouTube comment section. That's usually where I see the mean answers, but you know, we'll see. But
you know, we gave him the whole A this time. Usually, I'm called an a-hole. So
That's well, yeah. I've been called that too. You know. And they don't leave out the two S's either. So, but that's all right. You know, it's I bring it on myself. You know, and you as a comedian, I'm sure you know you have your shirt. You know how to handle hecklers, right?
I need an audience to have hecklers, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. Fair enough. That's a good comedian joke. I like that.
Oh, well.
Last night I was, not to go off on a rant, but Dennis Miller, but, I couldn't sleep last night. I fell asleep and then I woke up in the middle of the night and I put on Netflix and I found this special, you know, four living comedians inducted four legendary deceased comedians into a Hall of Fame. So that might be you someday, Kyle. You never know.
My legacy will, yeah, I will definitely not see my greatest legacy. So,
well, maybe, well, that's right. Yeah, it's kind of morbid. Maybe you'll be the person who's your career is so hot that you'll be inducting one of these guys or women. You never know. Yeah,
I'm from your lips to the chat's ears.
There you go. Well, on that note, I think we're going to call it a night. It was definitely great interacting with everybody in the live chat and with you, Kyle. It was a fun show, and hopefully we can do it again.
I look forward to it.
All righty. You guys take care, and you take care, Kyle. And as I always say, go Steelers. Have a great night, everybody.